ജയം ശുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം. നിത്യലീലാ പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാജ് ശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യശീല ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാ കൃഷ്ണ ഗോപ ഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാ കുണ്ടഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് ജയ്. വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാം കി ജയ്. മായപ്പൂർ ധാം കി ജയ്. മധുരപുരി ധാം കി ജയ്. ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാം കി ജയ്. ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാം കി ജയ്. ഗംഗാമായിക്ക് ജയ്. യമുനാമായിക്ക് ജയ്. തുളസീദേവിക്ക് ജയ്. ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് ജയ്. സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദക്ക് ജയ്. ഗൗർ പ്രേമനന്ദി. ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ്. ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ്. ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ്. ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ്. ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ഗൗരാംഗ. ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശീല പ്രഭുപാദ്. നമാം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നിധി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ. ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ. ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ. ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ. സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധരവവാർണവാൽ ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷകൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാ നാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവ സാഗരേ. മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവാം. ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത പ്രഭോ. നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവഭാവ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമന തം നമാമി ഹരിം വരം. ജന്മാദ്യസ്സ യതോന്വയാദിതരദ ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൽ തേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദിഗവയേ മുഹ്യന്തിയൽ സൂരയാം. തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷാം ദാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി. ധർമ്മപ്രോജ്ജിത ഗൈതവോത്രപരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണാം സദാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം. ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം വാപരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്യതേത്ര കൃതി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭി തൽക്ഷണാൽ. നിഗമകൽപതരോർഗളിതം ഫലം ശുഗമുഖാദമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിപത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോ രസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഹ. സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാ. യം പ്രവ്രജന്തമനുഭേദമഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈവായനോ വിരഹകാതരമാജുഹാവാം പുത്രേതി തന്മൈതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിമാനതോസ്മി. യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖിലം ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിതീർഷതാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിനാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം. നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേൽ. കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണു കുണിതാദൃതാനനേന്ദോ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭതാം മുരാരേ മധുരീം ന കണികാവി കാപികാപി നമോ ഓം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമദേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിതി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതീ ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണീ പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദീ പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാർവിന്ദാർഭ്യം നമഃ. വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശാം യാസം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദീഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമഃ. പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിതചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി. കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ വാസദാം പുരതോ മമ. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീ ഭഗവതി അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീം അംബ ത്വാമനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണീ. നമോസ്തു ദേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഉല്ലാരവിന്ദായതപത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയം പ്രദീപ. പ്രപന്നപാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകബാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമഃ. സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സ സുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹദ്. വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും. ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥജല ഗാന്ധാരനീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനീ കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാവികർണഘോരമകര ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സോതീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവ. പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകകേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹ പേബീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാത് ഭാരത പങ്കജ കലിമല പൃഥ്വം സിനശ്രേയസേ. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്വന്ദി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർ വേദൈ സാംഗപദൈ ക്രമ ഉപനിഷദൈർഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഹം ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. So, we have to justify or prove that Vedam is eternal, isn't it? As I said yesterday, that if you say the soul is eternal, that is acceptable. But if you say Vedam is eternal, people will question that, which is understandable. When you say soul is eternal, it's not like the same way when you say Vedam is eternal, isn't it? When you say soul is eternal, people tend to accept it, that soul has to be eternal. If you look into the Shastram, you get that understanding from there, that the nature of the soul is eternal. Krishna has also established that in the Bhagavad Gita. In the beginning itself, soul is eternal. And that people will find it easy to accept. But if you say Vedam is eternal, people will have a difficulty there. They are two different things, isn't it? Why it is so? That's very difficult to say. That's our mind is like that. We find it easier to accept the soul is eternal, but we find it difficult to accept the Vedam is eternal. So therefore, to explain this point, how to establish that the Vedam is eternal, it requires a lot of arguments to support it, that Vedam is eternal. What are the factors that makes us to think Vedam is not eternal? First we have to find out that. And then one after the other, you have to remove them from our mind. How to get rid of that? So that is the process that is followed. So, yesterday we said this, that certain, almost all the hymns in the Vedam has certain letters, certain words and certain sentences. That's how it is, isn't it? So, the letters are all chosen letters. Like, as I said, the first hymn or the Rig in the Rigvedam itself, Agni Mele Purohitam. So, A, Ga, that order has to follow. Now, what is that technical thing behind these letters that we don't know at this stage? We don't know that, what it is. So, when these, they are called Varnam. Varnam means these letters. When the Varnam, even if you accept these letters are eternal, letters are eternal, but there is an order in which these letters are written, which forms the words. The order of the letters is the form of the words, right? So, and who has done that? Who decided that this should be the order, right? So, just because saying that letters which are written in an order called padam or word, you can't say that it is eternal because of that, right? Then why do we say Vedam is eternal? Because this is where the problem. When we say Vedam is eternal, how does people understand that? That you have to look at it, right? So, someone who has trained in the Vedam, who has studied Vedam, in the sense that from a childhood, who has been trained to recite the Vedam properly, right? When he recites the Vedam, the Swaram, Kramam, Matra, three things comes in. Swaram means Udatam, Anudatam, Swaridam. That means the tones, higher, middle and the lower, the three different tones. That's called Swaram. They call Shastram, they call it as Udatam, Anudatam, Swaridam, in that way. Then Kramam. Kramam means its order, the way it is spoken. And Matra means the amount of energy puts into each of these letters. The amount of energy you inject into the letters. Where to give stress on which letter. These are all very important for the Vedam. When you say a word, which letter has to be given stress and which should not be given stress? This way. So, Matra. And this, if you look, all the Vedam reciters from Kashmir to Kanyakumari, they follow the same. There's no difference at all, right? From time immemorial, this pattern remained the same. In reading Srimad Bhagavatam, it doesn't happen. But in reciting Vedam, it happens. So, why? Why does that happen? You have to think all these things, isn't it? While reading Srimad Bhagavatam or any other Puranam, this stress is not on the Matra, Varnam, Matra, Swaram. Those three things are not taken into account. Someone will stress something one way while reading Bhagavatam, another person will read in a little different way. And that's acceptable. There's not something wrong in that, because it's not Vedam. But when it comes to Vedam, this is stressed. This is important. this cannot be written off. So, so because this didn't change at all, from Kashmir to Kanyakumari, it hasn't changed from time immemorial. In that aspect, it is spoken Vedam is eternal. One of them. One of the aspects of saying that is, because it hasn't changed from time immemorial, from one place to another, and it's all over, whether it is in Gujarat or in Bengal or in Maharashtra, elsewhere, wherever it is, that varnam matra swaram of reciting the Vedam hasn't changed, right? How long will it stay like this? That is very difficult to say, right? Because as far as this survival of this Vedam is concerned, it's not in our control. It's not in our control, right? But you can see some of the branches of the Vedam has disappeared. There is Lobani Shakhas in the Vedam. Based on the different rishis, there are different shakhas. Shakha means branches, right? So many of them have disappeared. It's not available at the moment, right? Then how do you say that it is eternal, right? Well, so what they're saying is that when you are speaking or reciting the Vedam, so that particular Veda shakha or branch of the Vedam, it has got its own varnam, kramam, swaram. That if it is completed and it is recited in that way, only then that Veda Shakha is accepted. Just because you have used the same words, it doesn't mean that it is acceptable. If only if it is recited in the particular pattern, Varnam, Matra, Swaram, all the three things, in its order, and it has to remain the same. It has to remain the same. Only then it is acceptable, first thing. Only then it is acceptable. So, so that is why another way of saying that it is eternal. Because it stayed like this. Therefore it is eternal. Therefore it is eternal. That means it is doesn't change. It remains like that forever. So, this system, what we call, yesterday we were saying this word, apaurusheyam. Apaurusheyam means that this system of teaching that is through the guru shishya parampara, adhyapanam adhyayanam parampara, adhyavaga adhyayanam, that means the guru shishya system, that it has not broken. It's not broken. No vichedam has happened. Vichedam means breaking up. That system hasn't changed. It what was then in the past remains the same even today. It hasn't changed. Proper, that is, you can't take it to university and say we have started a new system. It's not acceptable. Simply not acceptable. Right? So, if this system breaks up, like the way it has been taught millions of years ago, and if that system breaks up, then what we say is, you have lost that Vedam. You have lost it. If your system, because it's not only the letters or the language that matters. All these factors are taken into account. Matra, Varnam, Swaram, the Kramam, that has to follow. And then the way it is spoken in everywhere has to remain the same. And the system of teaching from guru to shishya, or the teacher who teaches the Vedam and the student who studies the Vedam, that system also has to remain. Only then that Veda Shakha is available. Otherwise, it's not available. It's not there. It's not acceptable. For example, just because many Veda Shakha has disappeared like this, because there was no student to learn. There was no teacher to teach. And because of that, Veda Shakha has gone away. Even though they may be available in the books or in the recording. But as far as Vedam is concerned, it's gone. Do you get the point? That it's available in the books. It's available in the recording. But even if you have recorded it somewhere, just because it is recorded doesn't mean it is existing. I don't know whether you get the point or not. That just because you have recorded it somewhere and you have kept it in the books doesn't mean it's available. That as far as Vedam is concerned, authorities of the Vedam is concerned, that Shaka is gone. Why? Adhyana Adhyamana Parampara, that Guru Shishya way of teaching has gone from the system and therefore it's gone. Suppose you start studying those books now and start learning this now, it won't work. It won't work, right? So, therefore we say it's not existing, it's gone, right? So, Adhyedhav means a student, or what we call student today, or Adhyedhav, or the Shishya, who is learning this, right? Because he is not there. Who has learned it? From the mouth of the Guru, from the face of the Guru. And he has accepted it in that order, right? Varnam, Kramam, Swaram, right? So if both are not there, that means there is a teacher who is teaching that, and there is a disciple who is learning that from the face of the teacher. Both are existing, and if it is still there, then that Veda Shaka is there. Just because it's in the recording or it's in the books, it doesn't mean it's there. Vedam is lost. It's already lost. That's what it is, right? So this is the situation. How when you say Vedam is eternal, these factors also comes into it, right? The other thing we have to prove is this, that when we say apaurusheyam, right, that concept is in another level, right? Paurusheyam and apaurusheyam, two different words, right? One is called paurusheyam. You know the word paurusham. It is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita also. You'll see in the 9th or 10th chapter, it says, Krishna says, I am the paurusham in a person, ability in a man. There it is translated as ability. So paurusham, that is paurusham. So paurusham in a person, and then this is also called apaurusheyam, beyond paurusham. Right? Beyond paurusham. So one is paurusham and the other one is apaurusham. Right? So when you say paurusham something, if a purusha means man, generally referred to as man, when he says something, it's not because of that it is called paurusheyam, but lot of people are reciting the Vedam, right? But we don't say it is paurusheyam. Why? Because, for example, just to give an example, you'll get it. Kalidas wrote Shakuntalam, famous drama, famous book, right? Kalidas wrote that. Now, suppose you have recited a verse from Shakuntalam. That means that verse is not your verse. It is from Kalidas's book, right? And you have not created that verse. That verse was created by Kalidas, right? Suppose you have changed the letters in those verses and you spoke that, then it is not Kalidas's verse anymore. It's your verse then, isn't it? So, therefore, what they say is, if Kalidas has compiled a verse and if you have recited that verse, Kalidas is the original creator of the verse. And you have what they call it as Rajana. Rajana means Rajaita, one who created that. And you are the person who has recited that. Ucha Rajaita, it's called, right? So, Vedam is, suppose it's recited by a Purusha, as a person, or other people are reciting the Vedam, it's not because of that it is called Paurusheyam. What does that mean? That means that it is not created by anybody. It's not created by anybody. Creation means that it is like this, that somebody has created the thoughts in that verse, the ashem or the message in that verse, message or the principle or whatever that is coming through that verse. After you have understood that, and then in order that that point, if you want to get it to somebody else, you may have to use your own language to explain that for somebody to understand. Suppose Kalidas' verse is recited, everybody may not understand that. So someone who has understood that, he has to take the message of the verse and explain it in another language so that others can understand. Right? So, if you do like that, you create new words in that and you explain things to help others to understand the message in the verse from Kalidas. Right? That is when, so for example, suppose I have, that's when it is said Rachana. Rachana means when it is compiled like that. Right? So, suppose there is a book in front of me, right? And I have said that this book is a Srimad Bhagavatam in front of me, it's here, right? And what have I done now? I said, I have a book here in front of me, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. You don't know what that book is, but I have known that this book is Srimad Bhagavatam, right? So, I became conscious of that book first. I became conscious of that. You are just looking from there. You don't know what that book is. There's some book here. But me, I have looked at that book, studied that book, and understood that it is Srimad Bhagavatam. So I am conscious of that book. So in order to get this idea into your mind that this is what book that book is, I am using the word Srimad Bhagavatam. And you get to know, oh, this book is Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? So, whatever, in order to transfer this understanding to somebody, you use a particular words to express that idea into, get into the other's mind, right? So, so I have to use those words which will convey the message to the other person. That it is, if I say Srimad Bhagavatam, immediately you will start relating with that book by saying that word, right? So, I have to use the word Srimad Bhagavatam. In that order, only those letters only I should use, and they should be used in that order only. Only then it will get through, right? So, that is called Paurusheyam. That's called Paurusheyam. It's not Apaurusheyam. I'm just saying the difference between Vedam and normal vocabulary, where the difference is coming from. This is Paurusheyam, that I have used some words to convey this idea about this book to you, and it is called Srimad Bhagavatam, and you get the understanding, right? This is called Paurusheyam. It's not Apaurusheyam. Why we say Vedam is Apaurusheyam? This is a difficult thing to understand, because there are so many things involved in this. For example, say, Vishwamitra is performing penances, right? Rishi. He is a Rishi, isn't it? Vishwamitra is a Rishi. He is performing penances in the forest, right? And he is the one who has created this Gayatri, through whom we understand. Gayatri has come. Vishwamitra Rishi. So, Vishwamitra is a Rishi, through whom we understand Gayatri, right? So, we are saying that, how did he get these words of Gayatri in him? How did he start saying this, right? So, he has understood, he experienced something inside, and he thought that these words are, this experience what he is having in him, is something beyond this world, beyond this experience in this world. He felt it in him, and he thought that this should be handed over to others as well. And he decided like that. He decided like that, right? Then, you can see that word, Om Bhur Bhuvah Svah Tat Savidur Varenyam, these words, right, in the Gayatri, Tat That's Savidurvarenyam. So he starts saying these words. Rishi is saying this. And the way he spoke, his disciples heard that. And they followed the Rishi's words, Vishwamitra Maharshi's words, in a particular order. How he spoke, they caught that. The way Vishwamitra has spoken, the disciples have caught that. And they continued with that, right? So, if you have started thinking like this, then it is not above Rishayam. What I am saying is, how different Vedam is from everything else. This is the important thing to recognize. We will come to this detail. That Vishwamitra Rishi experienced something inside. And he wanted to give that experience to others. The only way you can communicate is through words, isn't it? So Gayatri Mantram is from him. It is through him Gayatri Mantram has come. So when he spoke Om Bhur Bhuvasvaha Tat Savitur Varenyam, like that, all the words that has come into it. His disciples who heard that and the way he spoke, they took it as it is, what the way he has spoken. They took it and they recited those Gayatri Mantram. And it stayed like that. So, but it is still Paurushayam. It is not a Paurushayam. It is still Paurushayam, right? So, here, it's quite a complicated thing it is. In the sense that he's saying here that the meaning of that, what he spoke, right? If you have understood that what he experienced then at that moment, if it is dependent on something else, where did that come from, that experience in him? Is there an authority behind it? Which is called Pramanam. For example, Vishwamitra Maharshi is saying to us something, right? On what authority Vishwamitra is saying this to us? That's the important thing, isn't it? Just because Vishwamitra has said something, why should I accept it? That question comes, right? So, if he has an authority, he has to tell us what that authority is. Where did he get this realization from? Right? So, you have to say these things to people who don't accept authority. You and me may accept authority. But suppose you have to tell somebody else that this is very authorized. Vedam is authorized. And because it was spoken by Vishwamitra Maharshi, we accept it, but the other person need not accept it. Somebody who doesn't have any knowledge of Vishwamitra, any knowledge of Vedam, how do you expect him to accept that? It's not possible, isn't it? And in the Vedam, the kind of things spoken is many. Many, many things are discussed in that. And there are many things which cannot be experienced directly. Direct perception is not possible. And they are spoken in the Vedam. And therefore, you will see this about Vedam. There is a book called Amnaya Mathanam. In there it says like this. Pratyakshena animityena yastu upayo na vidyade edam vadandi vedena tasmal vedasya vedada. Just to make us aware that do not look at Vedam like the way you look at any other book. Not to look at it. Why? Vedam will tell you what through direct perception and by inference what you cannot get it. Pratyakshena, Animityena. These are the two upayam, two processes that is available. Yastu upayam na vidyate. Through these two upayam you cannot get it. That is what is spoken by the Vedam. This is how this word says. Yastu upayo na vidyate. Edam vadandi vedena tasmal vedasya vedada. therefore it has become Vedam. So normally we have only these two processes, isn't it? Pratyaksham, Anumanam. Pratyaksham means direct perception. Anumanam means inference. Neither of them work. Neither way it is possible. Through neither of them it's possible. Neither Pratyaksham nor Anumanam. If there is something beyond than these two, then it is Vedam. Then it is Vedam. Right? So, sometimes people think like this, that everything in this world, whatever knowledge, information is available, is all in the Vedam. That is not true. That's also not true. Right? So, and the rishis' approach is, they don't have to explain everything in this world. As far as they are concerned, they don't need to explain everything in this world. Right? And that is not their tradition. For example, computer. Computer is not mentioned in the Vedam. You see? Computer is not mentioned in the Vedam. Right? So, but some people, what they do, they want to say everything is in the Vedam. And therefore, in order to prove that computer is mentioned in the Vedam, they'll pick up something from the Vedam and twist the whole thing and trying to prove to the world it's already there in the Vedam. That's not the process. That's not right. Right? So, because people have this understanding that everything has a very subtle thing behind it, and only if you find out, matter becomes very serious in this way. And that somehow happened like that. People have started thinking like this, that everything has to be explained in a very, first should be in a subtle form, and whatever that is spoken has to be interpreted in a subtle way, only then it is acceptable in that way, right? But that is not Arsham. That's not Rishi's process, right? So, sometimes the direct meaning is acceptable. It's not that always the direct meaning is rejected, right? For example, what do we need from all these things? The Brahma Vicharam. Brahma Vicharam means that Brahma Jnanam, knowledge of the soul, right? That's what we are trying to achieve in spiritual life, isn't it? The existence of the soul. And in order to realize the existence of the soul, you have to think also. You have to put some energy into it. Reflecting, hearing, and nididhyasanam. That means you are constantly repeating it. And there is a process for that, right? So, Brahma Vicharam, that is what is called Atma Vicharam, Brahma Vicharam. These are the words used for that. That means you are doing Vicharam. Vicharam means you are constantly absorbing in that. So, this constant meditation on a particular thing and to find the subtle side of these things about the soul is called Brahma Vicharam, right? There are many statements in the Vedam about this. Many statements in the Vedam about that, right? So, sometimes people take all these words and gives various interpretations to that. Develops like that, right? So, but it is not necessary always to explain it that way. Just to give an example, in Shakuntala's story, there is Shakuntala there and there is Dushyanta. Now, some people will say, Shakuntala is the Jiva and Dushyanta is the Brahman. In this way, interpretation can start like this. It's endless, it is, if you start like that, right? Right. So, Dushyanta is Brahman and Shakuntala is Jiva. And in that way, if you start, just like we say in Bhagavadam, we say Rukmini is Jiva, Krishna is the Brahman. There it is okay. But in every book, if you start saying like this, Shakuntala is Jiva and Dushyanta is Brahman and all that, if you start interpreting like this, it goes nowhere, isn't it? It's one thing when you're saying about Rukmini and Krishna. Jivatma, Paramatma or Aikyam, that is what is spoken in the, that everybody accepts that. In the Rukmini Swayamvaram's marriage, how Rukmini wants to go back to Krishna. That is spoken in this way, a Jivatma's effort in life to go back to Paramatma at the end, right? So there Rukmini is represented as Jivatma. That is the Vedantam explanation of the Rukmini's pastimes with Krishna, Rukmini's marriage to Krishna, Rukmini's Swayamvaram. Right. So this interpretation thing is not something very arsham means it's not always rishis have accepted that. Many places rishis accept directly also, right? So also it is not required that everything has to be justified by saying that it is in the Vedam, it is spoken in the Vedam, right? It may be there, may not be there. It may be there in the Vedam in some subtle form, but it is not important. It's not important. What does Vedam talks about generally? What they're saying is, dharmam brahmani vedega vedyam. Means, two things. One dharmam and the other one brahmam. One about the truth and one about dharmam. What is dharmam? What's the right thing? And when the other one is, what is the truth? Dharma means, you know, what jiva has to, how to live. That is dharma. How to live in this world. That's dharma. And then, what is the truth? That's brahma. Right. So, what that means is, both these things, whatever has to be spoken about these two things, dharma and brahma, everything that has to be spoken about dharmam and brahmam is in the Vedam. This is all requires, Vedam says, about Vedam. Not every other knowledge about all other things, what we have acquired in the Maya, all that knowledge is not important for the Vedam. Vedam gives importance only to dharmam and brahmam. How to conduct life and how to understand the truth. That's all. All other information in this world like physics, chemistry, biology and all other kinds of things is not spoken in the Vedam. Something sometimes you may find here and there, but that's not important for the rishis. Rishis are not concerned about it, right? And we also need only that, right? For example, bhakti. Yeah? Bhakti is a dharmam actually, isn't it? When you think about bhakti, we have understood bhakti in so many different ways, doing aartis and doing aarti or worshipping someone, arranging an aarti plate or chanting holy name or dancing or preaching. All this is considered to be part of bhakti. But bhakti, strictly speaking, is a dharmam of the jiva. Strictly speaking. That means all the time, when a jiva is fully conscious that everything is under the control of the supreme power, that is bhakti. That is the actual definition of bhakti. That's how to understand bhakti, right? So, bhakti is a dharmam, then you can find that bhakti in the Vedam. Bhakti in the Vedam, right? And through bhakti, through bhakti, you can go back to Krishna. You can realize the truth. Bhagavatam says like that. It is possible. At that time, we have to think, when the Bhagavatam is saying that, through bhakti, you can go back to Krishna, that then your question will come, that what is Krishna then? What is the Swarupam of Krishna? Krishna's form, right? In the average person's level, you give a form. That is enough for them. I'm going to see him somewhere in Golokam or somewhere I'm going to meet Krishna there. And then you are satisfied with that answer. But first of all, where is the proof that Krishna is there? In that form in Golokam. Where is the proof? That's what that means is, it's not Vedam, it has gone into belief then. You are just believing it because somebody has told you like that and you are accepting it, right? That is not how Vedam goes. Vedam saying is something, Vedam won't go in that mode, because that, if you take that approach, everything has become belief then. You may believe, somebody else may not believe it. That's not authority anymore. For Vedam, it is not acceptable that way. That approach is not acceptable. But quite often in the beginning, you can only do that way. That's the only way you can start something. You have to make people believe something first. And then bring them into doing some sadhana, refrain from sinful life, and in that way get some purification, and then you start telling them the higher things. Otherwise, what will happen is, people will hold on to that belief only, and they will remain in the belief platform throughout their life. That's no good. Because that belief, if you cultivate strength on the belief, if you live in here, some disaster happens, all your belief will change straight away. You believed something, and then on that belief you are living in this world. And some big disaster, like Prabhupada used to give the example, during the Second World War, when a lot of young people died, right? So in Germany particularly, there was such a shortage of men. All the women, they started saying, God doesn't exist. Why did all this happen? And people stopped going to the church and praying. Everything stopped because belief can go like this. A disaster comes in life, all your belief can go straight away. It won't last. So anything built upon belief will not last very long. It's always subject to this problem. So that is why Vedam does not go in that route. They don't want to tell you that believe everything what we say, that there is Golokam, there is Krishna there, you can go back to him and stay with him and you will be alright that time. Because that's the problem, right? So where is the proof that there is Bhagavad Swarupam? There is a Swarupam like that. That is why in Vedam, Puranam, Bhagavatam, everywhere, it is spoken as its character. Its qualities are spoken first. Like you will see, Melpathur put it like this, Sandranandava Bhodalmagam, he said. Didn't address as Krishna straight away. Krishna Swarupam was spoken. That is Swarupam. Sandram, Anandam, Avabhodam. Three things, right? So, when Sandranandavam, this is what Swarupam is. It didn't speak about how his hands are, legs are, eyes are, face is and all that. Instead, the Swarupam was spoken. His Swarupam is Anandam, Avabhodam, Sandram. Ananda, Avabhodam. Right? So, in that way, you will find in the... Similarly, in Bhagavatam, how does it say? Janmadhyasya yadaha. Didn't say Krishna's name straight away. Instead, saying like this, Janmadhyasya yadaha. Everything, the source from which everything comes. So, you see the difference? Vedam does not give importance straight away into the form, first of all. It starts with something that, although while early days, we will always speak about a form to start with. But later on, because you know the difficulties, if you follow that path, beliefs, they don't want to get stuck in that. So therefore what they say is, what is the Swarupam? What is Bhagavad Swarupam? What is Krishna Swarupam? Sandra Ananda Avabhodam or Janmadhyasya Yadaha. From everything comes from. That's how definition begins like that, isn't it? And that Janmadhyasya Yadaha, as in Vedanta Sutram also, Vedavyasa Maharshi used the same thing. It's the second sutram in the Brahma Sutram. So the same thing in Bhagavatam also he has used. Right? So here, where is the proof that this is the Swarupam of the truth? Sandrananda Avabhodam. Again, it is like another statement, isn't it? I can't say it is my experience. It is Sandrananda Avabhodam. And also, I don't have that experience. Some great personalities may have experienced that the Swarupam is Sandram, Anandam, Avabhodam. Mahatmas may have experienced that. Therefore, because they have experienced that, for them that is Pramanam. Because they have experienced that. But it is not Pramanam for me. Because I have not experienced it. Right? It is still something, it's showing a way to go to that truth. That's all. That much help I can get from that. Right? So, just like if there is a book here, in order for me to say that the book is there, I have to see the book first, isn't it? And Otherwise, I have to accept the information of some other great personality who tells me that, right? I can accept it that way. So, either if you have direct experience, you can accept it, or you can accept it on the authority of some great personality, right? So, then the question comes, how did he become a Mahatma? Who decides who is Mahatma? This problem comes, isn't it? For example, here, Vishwamitra Maharshi, he experienced a Gayatri inside, right? And then he gave it to his disciples, right? And in the same way, many, many rishis, through various mantram, Upanishads are all called mantram, isn't it? All Upanishads are called Upanishad mantram, it's called Upanishad mantram. They are not called Upanishad hymns, it's called Upanishad mantram. Like we say Mahamantram, Hare Krishna Mahamantram. In the Upanishads it's there, so it's a Upanishad mantram it is. Right. So, this, after many, many rishis, in the same way, many things they have experienced themselves and they gave it to the world in the form of these statements in the Upanishads, in the Upanishads. If you say that Vedam is like that, that is also not correct. It's quite complicated this is, because the scholars who study the Vedam and those who have this Vedic background, they have put a lot of thoughts into this, how Vedam is given such a prominent position in everything, right? So, their arguments also there. They are not like us sheep following. They don't follow like the sheep. They will question everything from a mundane point of view. A person who has no connection with the Vedam, how he will argue about it, how his mind works. And you have to give an answer for that. Not for, preaching to the converted. That's not the one it is, right? So, if you say like that, who says that he is a Mahatma, right? And they have their own arguments for that. You know why? For example, we are saying about this Gayatri, came through Vishwamitra, right? Then we are saying that who decides that Vishwamitra was a Maharshi and who decides he was a Mahatma? Because if you look at the stories, you will see Vishwamitra had Ragadvesham inside. You remember? Mm. He also behaved sometimes like ordinary people. So how do you say he is a Mahatma? You can ask that question. And he is quite justified in asking that. Is it not? If he is a Mahatma means what? No Ragadvesham inside. If you have Ragadvesham, you are not Mahatma. So when there is Ragadvesham in Vishwamitra, how would you say that what he is saying I should accept? That question comes. You know, Vishwamitra had terrible enmity towards Vasishtha in the stories. It was like that, isn't it? They were always fighting each other. And similarly, Vishwamitra had this relationship with Menaka. All that what happened after that. So he had Kamam inside. He had Ragam inside. He had Dvesham inside. How do you say he is a Mahatma then? And we say all the Gayatri has come from him. How will you explain there? This is the difficulty. So, because when you say things, it has to be acceptable to the anybody. That is why Vedam's position is different. Right? So, then people say, he had yogic power. This like that, right? Through power of yoga, you can realize many things. Power of yoga. You can realize many things. So, you can say like this, through the power of yoga he has realized all these things. So, instead of saying that, he directly realized it through the power of yoga that he has experienced all these things. If you say like that, because yoga is also one way of the from of the philosophic, isn't it? Patanjali's yogam. So if you advance in the path of yogam, you develop certain Aishwarya Siddhis, powers. You develop certain powers. You know that. It's in the Bhagavatam, isn't it? Anima, Mahima, Lekima, Garima, all that things what spoken. Making, becoming bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest, able to enter into somebody else's body. Dura Shravana Darshanam. You can sit here and listen to the sound from America without the instrument help. And similarly, you can see what is going through somebody else's mind. These are all Yoga Siddhis, which is part of the Ashta Aishwarya Siddhi, what Krishna calls it, right? So, so somebody says he is a yogi, and therefore all these things I have realized through my yoga power. Then, and he says something which is not in the Veda. He says something like that. And if you start saying like that, and you start declaring in that way, how can somebody say that it is not Vedam? Right? So, I don't have any yoga power. And then how can I say about somebody else's yoga power? Somebody else has developed this yoga power, right? So, there, Shastram says, there is a problem with the stability of the words. Avyavasthitattvam it is called. That means whatever he is saying, it is not acceptable for one reason only. What is that? He may have yoga shakti, yoga power. And through that power he has developed some mahima or some glories he has acquired. And because he has acquired through that yoga power all these things, it has appeared for him in the form of this knowledge, what has happened to him. People who are follow the path of logic, they will have a problem with this, right? But because this answer won't be satisfying them. Because they are not yogis. The ordinary people, they are not yogis. So you tell them that Vishwamitra has acquired all these things through his yoga power. They will say to you, how do you know all these things? That again it becomes a little dodgy there. That you are saying something, Vishwamitra acquired something through his yoga power and therefore I should accept it. You believe Vishwamitra, but I don't believe in Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra has got a lot of problems like me. So why should I believe him? So even if he has acquired through yoga power and he was a great yogi, as Shastram says, how it can be acceptable to somebody else who doesn't believe in all these things? It's a difficult thing, isn't it? So that is why then therefore many people won't accept it. They will speak insultingly. Insulting means they will say, we can't accept it, what you are saying. Right? Then there is these books called Revelations, something that is revealed to you. There's books about that, about revelations, right? Revealed knowledge, as it is called, right? And there are books which are written against revealed knowledge. If you say to somebody, all this knowledge is revealed to us, they'll say to you, well, keep to yourself. We don't want to hear anything from you because it's revealed to you, not to me. So how do I accept that? Vedam has to fight all these things. This is what I'm saying. Vedam has to fight all these type of people. People who object to revealed knowledge. There's a lot of books about it, you know, that who will object to your revealed knowledge. Because all religions are like that. They will say it was revealed to our prophet or our God. It was through him that it was revealed to him. Then you can't say anything anymore. That's the end of it, isn't it? So, is it revealed like that? No. That's also not acceptable. So, therefore, they will say to you like this. Sometimes crazy people will do certain things. Unmadam it's called, madness, right? So you can, some things are revealed to them also. The mad people, they also get certain things revealed to them. And they will say something. Because it's revealed to them, does that become authority? revelation can happen to anybody. I can say something is revealed to me. And a crazy person, completely crazy, he does so many mad things. And if I ask him, he says, this was revealed to me. That's why I'm doing all these things. So revealed knowledge also has its own difficulty for people with to accept, for people to accept, right? So, so if you try to prove Vedam in that way, then you will become a joke in front of them. If you try to prove the Vedam in that way, that, oh, this is all revealed to the Rishi, so you have to accept it. They will not accept that. Because whether this revelation is divine or through madness, we don't know that, right? Or through yoga has happened. Yoga Siddhi is also like that, isn't it? You develop some perfection. Yoga means perfection in that. Anything, if you become very perfect, you get the Siddhis. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavadam. Aishwarya Siddhi. You remember? In the 18th, 19th chapter, in the 11th canto. He talks about 8 Aishwarya Siddhis, which only Krishna has, and there is 16 Upasiddhis, that means supplementary ones, which can be practiced and developed by others. But many, many great rishis had this, many of these yoga siddhis. Krishna has given it to them. So, that is through effort they have acquired those yoga siddhis, right? So, whether it is yoga siddhi, or whether it is madness, or whether it was revealed, whichever way you say, people won't accept it. Because at the end, you don't have the experience. It is somebody else is saying something and you have to accept them in that way, right? So, what they're saying is that through yoga siddhi, everything is possible, right? We are not denying that because it is a fact of life that yoga process is capable of developing siddhis in a person. That is not denied. That is still true, right? And yoga siddhi is a particular aspect of the Patanjali Sutra. Because Patanjali was expert in the developing this yoga siddhi. He became so successful and he gave books to us and then others practiced it and they succeeded in realizing it. So you can't completely write off yoga siddhi. That's not possible. Its validity is still there. Yoga siddhi, validity is there, right? And it is known very well that if you perform yoga practices, anushtanam, yoga anushtanam, through that you will develop siddhis. All these things are in the Vedam, in the Shastram, and it is accepted by authorities also. But it is a Vedic principle that is. It is an ashayam or idea that coming from the Vedam, right? But our problem is that doesn't matter whether he is a yogi or who has got a siddhi, because yogis get the siddhis later, isn't it? They become siddhas. Right? They are acceptable if it is not against Vedam. They are acceptable. Right? That is the system. Suppose you have developed some yoga siddhi and if it is not against the Vedic knowledge, Vedam is anadi. Anadi means beginningless. Right? If it is not against the Vedam, then it is acceptable. If it is against the Vedam, then even if you have developed some yoga siddhi, it's not acceptable. It is not acceptable. He is not a yogi. Better to say like that. And if it is not against it, then it is acceptable. For example, when you are studying the Shastram, right? And Vedam, as I said before, it is anadi, beginningless, right? And when you are understanding that ideas spoken in the Vedam, the first thing is, suppose somebody says to you, he is self-realized. Or someone points out to you that that person is a realized soul, right? You can still test him, that person. How? I don't need knowledge of the self for that. Because whatever he is saying, if it is not against the principles that is spoken in the Vedam, that's the first thing you look at. If it is against the principles of Vedam, then even if somebody says he is self-realized, it's not acceptable. just to say all these major decisions in life, especially about self-realization. When you make about a person, whatever that person is saying, if it is in agreement with the Vedam, then he is self-realized, acceptable. But if he says some things which is not in the Vedam or which is not in agreement with the Vedam, then even if it may look very appealing to us, it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable. It's a difficult thing. Of course, we are not in that problem. We don't have that such problems. But but in the higher level, I'm saying this. That is why that you will find this often when Kapila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti Devi, Sankhya Shastram. In Sankhyam, lot of things are spoken in agreement with the Vedam. But some places, there will be certain things which may not be in total agreement with the Vedam. And in such instances, what they say, we offer our respects to Kapila Maharshi, but it's not acceptable. Do you understand now the difference? Even if it is a rishi, he has said something to you. You heard that. And in the light of the Vedam, whatever he has spoken is in agreement, then it is acceptable. If he has said something, even though he is a rishi, and what he has spoken is not in agreement with the Vedam, we offer obeisances to him, being a rishi. Sorry, we can't accept your statement. Why? You are not in agreement with the Vedam. Now you understand why Vedam is authority. This is how Vedam's authority is so strong that even rishis, nobody can question Vedam. Nobody has the authority or the right to question or change anything in the Vedam. That is the Vedam. Vedam is like that. Vedic knowledge is like that. So, here, pramana. Pramana means authority in that way, right? So, in this way, behind everything, all the knowledge in the Puranam, Shastram, Itihasam is everything, Vedam is kept as the solid wall behind it, right? So, when it is like this, how should we keep this Vedam? You have to think about it. How to keep that relationship with the Vedam in that level, right? You should never think about it as a person has compiled it, this Vedam, not individual. It has not come from an individual, right? Now, you know that we think that it has come through the rishis, isn't it? Now, these rishis also, for example, Vishwamitra and Vasishtha and all that, there is certain Vedic knowledge is spoken as though it has come through them, right? But strictly speaking, in the Shastram, Vasishtha, Vishwamitra and all are not individuals. That is, in the Puranam, they are represented as individuals, in the Puranam. But in the Upanishads and others, when you go into the higher level of self-realization, they are not accepted as individual, more accepted as a tattva. Vasishtha is a tattvam, Vishwamitra is a tattvam there, not as a personality. But ordinary people will not be able to take it like that initially. So therefore they bring it down in Puranam as personalities and present it to us, right? So, so even if you accept them as personalities, right, then what you say that they are the pravartakas of Vedam. Pravartakas means who operate the Vedam. Rishis who operate the Vedam. And in that way you accept that, but you will never say that it has come from them. They operate the Vedam, but it is not that they have, it has come through them. You will not say that, right? Because you see those who wants to establish the authority of the Vedam, they normally take two processes, right? One, what is acceptable to Vedantam, right? And the second one, what is acceptable to Mimamsa? Jaiminis, Mimamsa. And the other one, Vedavyasa Maharshi is Vedanta. Right? So, you can see, in the first one, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi says, Janmadhyas Sayatonvaya, the first verse itself. If you take that verse and look at that, you will see that, Yatha Adigavaye Muhyandiyal Suraya. Have you noticed Vedavyas, the way he has written that verse? If you look at it very carefully, you got to think all these things. Otherwise, it's just accepting translation purport, it's no use. But when you start looking at that verse itself, Janmadhyasya Yadonvayadidharadas Chartesh Abhijnas Surad Tene Brahma Hrda Ya Adigavaye Muhyandiyal Suraya. You will see here that Adigavi is Brahma, Lord Brahma. Right? And Tene Brahma Hrda, that the Vedam, he's talking about Vedam basically there, isn't it? What is this knowledge what Krishna, we say, gave to Brahma? Is Vedam. That's the knowledge. Tene Brahma Hrda Ya Adigavaye Muhyandiyal Suraya. Right? So what it says is that it was given to Lord Brahma. It was given to Lord Brahma. This knowledge was given to him. Right? So, in that verse, that word used, Brahma, is it not? Actually, it doesn't mean Lord Brahma there. It means Vedam. The meaning of that word is actually Vedam. Tene Brahma Hrida. Vedam in the heart appeared. That's how the actual meaning of that. But when it is translated and spoken in the way to make it easier for us, we speak about Lord Brahma, it appeared in his heart in that way. But what it is that Brahma is actually there, refers to Vedam. It is Vedam that has appeared, the knowledge, in other words, right? So it is not like a teacher, I know these things probably is confusing also a little bit when you hear this, right? It is not like a guru teaching a disciple, right? Hrada, the word used is Hrada, right? That means from the heart, it entered into another heart. That means the knowledge has, again, as soon as you say the heart, immediately you will start thinking there are two hearts. Like our heart. I got one heart, Krishna's heart and Brahma's heart. And it starts flowing from this heart to that heart. That's how you will think immediately, because we are so much locked up in name and form, is it not? Why living in Maya means locked up in name and form. Locked up in name and form. So, here it is not actually happening like that. What's happening is, this knowledge developed in Brahma's heart on its own. There is no transfer or anything happening there. Because Krishna is sitting in Brahma's heart also. So it's no necessary to bring knowledge from somewhere else and put it in here. Automatically it developed within, in him, this knowledge. Right? So, in the same way you will see that knowledge developed in Brahma's heart. Then you will find Brahma gave this knowledge to others, is it not? So you may start thinking, one day Brahma called Narada, told Narada, you sit there, I'll tell you something, and you hear from me. And then Narada understood everything, like the way you do in the class. You may be thinking like that, but that is not, this is what's happening there. It is happened, inside Narada Maharshi's heart also, Krishna is present. Atma is present, the consciousness is there. The knowledge automatically developed in that heart also. But while saying, we say like this, Brahma gave it to Narada, Narada gave it to Vyasa, Vyasa gave to Shukabrahmarshi, Shukabrahmarshi gave it to Parikshit. In this way we will say like that. But basically what's happening is, that's why, you know, that last verse in the, that verse is only to make us aware of that. Kasmai yena vibhasitoye madulo. Jnana Pradeepa Pura Tadrubena Janaradaya Munaye Krishnaya Tadrubina. യോഗീന്ദ്രായ ആത്മനാഥ ഭഗവദ്രാഥായ കാരുണ്യം തശുദ്ധം വിമലം വിശോകം അമൃതം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി. ദാറ്റ് സത്യം ഈസ് പ്രസന്റ് ഇൻ എവ്രിബഡീസ് ഹാർട്ട്. വെൻ ഇറ്റ് വാണ്ട്സ് ടു ഡെവലപ്പ്, ഇറ്റ് ക്യാൻ ഡെവലപ്പ് ഓൺ ഇറ്റ്സ് ഓൺ. ഇറ്റ് ഡസന്റ് നീഡ് എനി ട്രാൻസ്ഫർ ഫ്രം എനിവെയർ. ബട്ട് എ പേഴ്സൺ ലൈക് ശുഗബ്രഹ്മർഷി, വെൻ ഹി സ്പോക്ക് ടു പരീക്ഷിത്, വാട്ട് വാസ് ഹി ഡൂയിങ്? ദി നോളജ് വാട്ട് വാസ് ഓൾറെഡി ദർ ഇൻ പരീക്ഷിത്സ് ഹാർട്ട്, ഹി വാസ് ഇഗ്നൈറ്റിംഗ് ഇറ്റ് ഫ്രം ഔട്ട് സൈഡ്. Knowledge is already there. In all of us, it's there. Only thing is, it has not been set fire. Once it's set fire, then it will burn. And once it burns, it's there. That's the proof, right? So, so there we say, for example, in the Krishna is also saying this in the Bhagavad Gita in a little different way. He said that, then is, remember, jnana yogena sanghyanam karma yogena yoginam, the first part of that verse. If you look into Bhagavad Gita, you'll find there that yoga prokta puratana, that verse. ഏവം പരമ്പരാ ഇമം വിവസ്വതേ യോഗം പ്രോക്തവാനഹമവ്യയം വിവസ്വൻ മനവേ പ്രാഹ മനുരിക്ഷാകവേ ബ്രവീത്. ആൻഡ് ദെൻ വിൽ സീ ഏവം പരമ്പരാ പ്രാപ്തം ഇമം രാജർഷയോ വിദു സ കാലേ നേഹമഹത യോഗോ നഷ്ട പരന്തവ സ ഏവായം മയാദ്യ യോഗ പ്രോക്ത പുരാതന ഭക്തോസ്മേ സഖാചരി രഹസ്യം ഹേതദ് ഉത്തമം. ദീസ് വേഴ്സസ് ഇഫ് യു ലുക്ക് യു വിൽ സീ ദർ ഗീവ്സ് ഇംപ്രഷൻ ഏവം പരമ്പരാ പ്രാപ്തം ഇമം രാജർഷയോ വിദു. സോ ഓൺ പരമ്പര ലെവൽ വെൻ വി ഗെറ്റ് സം ഇംപ്രഷൻ അബൌട്ട് പരമ്പര ലൈക് ദിസ് ഇസ് ഇൻ ഇറ്റ് വി തിങ്ക് വാട്ട് ഡു വി അണ്ടർസ്റ്റാൻഡ് അബൌട്ട് പരമ്പര? പരമ്പര വി തിങ്ക് ലൈക് വി ഹാവ് എ ഗുരു, ഹി ഹാസ് എ ഡിസൈപ്പിൾ, ആൻഡ് ദ ഡിസൈപ്പിൾ ടോക്ക് സംബഡി എൽസ് ആൻഡ് ഹി ഹാസ് ഗോട്ട് അനദർ ഡിസൈപ്പിൾ. വി കോൾ വി മേക്ക് ഇറ്റ് ലൈക്ക് എ ഫാമിലി അഫെയർ. ഡിസൈപ്പിൾ ആൻഡ് വി ലൈക്ക് ടു കോൾ ഇം എസ് ഗ്രാൻഡ് ഡിസൈപ്പിൾ, ലൈക്ക് എ ഗ്രാൻഡ് സൺ. So whenever you bring the material terminology, material life, terminology in the material life, into spiritual life also, more bodily identity comes in there, isn't it? Like normal, we feel very comfortable when you say son, grandson, great-grandson in that way. So over a period, if you have noticed, devotees also use this terminology. Oh, he is my disciple and he is my grand disciple, Prabhupada's grand disciple. And he is a great grand disciple, the next generation who is to come. So we feel happy about it. Why? Because on the bodily level it makes it easier for us. So we completely see everything through the body, 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 body. Nothing else. But spiritual life is not like that. That is why these verses are there in Bhagavad Gita to make us aware of this. So even when you read this, you will say, Vaivaswan has spoken to Manu. And Manu spoke to Ikshvaku. So we start thinking, oh, Vaivaswan must have lived before Manu. And one day Vaivaswan must have called Manu and told him, I'll give you this knowledge. And you took it. And then Manu one day called his son Ikshvaku and told him, I'll tell you now what I got it. And we think like that, isn't it? But that is not how you take this, right? Knowledge is always inside everybody. And someone comes and sets fire to it, ignites that from inside, right? So, there also, Krishna is saying there that ലോകേസ്മിൻ ദ്വിധാനിഷ്ഠ പുരാ പ്രോക്തമയാനക ജ്ഞാനയോഗ്യേന സാഖ്യാനാം കർമ്മയോഗ്യേന യോഗിനാം. സേസ് ലൈക്ക് ദാറ്റ്, ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ്? സോ ഇറ്റ് ഈസ് യൂസ് സീ ദ വേർഡ് കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് യൂസ് നിഷ്ഠ ദ്വിധാ നിഷ്ഠ ടു സെറ്റ് അപ്പ് ലൈക്ക് ദിസ്. ഈ സെറ്റ് നോട്ട് ബേസ്ഡ് ഓൺ ദ ബോഡി. പുരാ പ്രോക്തമയാനക ഇറ്റ്സ് ബിൻ ഗോയിങ് ഓൺ, റൈറ്റ്? But here it, everything is spoken very much on a personal level so that we can relate with it, right? But as you get little bit more into it, you will see that it is a little different than as a person to person, right? So that's what he's saying here. So Sanaka, the four Kumaras, right? It is through them Jnanamargam survived. They are the recipients of the Jnanamargam, through them. Vasishta and the Kumaras, they are all recipients of the Jnanamargam, right? So in this way, that system stayed, Jnanamargam, right? So, have you noticed that this Ishvara or the Supreme Lord or Krishna, whomever you address that, he is not giving this knowledge not as his own opinion. Not as his own opinion. This has, you have to take this serious note of this. Why? Because when Krishna talks about Vedam, he will not show any freedom for himself to talk about Vedam. When Krishna says something about Vedam, he also says he doesn't have freedom to speak about Vedam as his personal opinion. Why? As far as Krishna is concerned, Vedam is anadi. This is all to show to us that eternal thing, eternal nature of the Vedam is even accepted by Krishna. Even Krishna has accepted the eternity of the Vedam. So therefore, he will also say, when he says in the Bhagavadam or Bhagavad Gita also, whenever reference to Vedam comes, the way Krishna says that, you have to look at it. In the Bhagavad Gita, there is a verse there. Hrishabhir bahudha proktham. You will see that verse. It is in the... look at that verse. 9th or 10th verse. Isn't it? That's 10th chapter, I think. 9th or 10th chapter. How Krishna says that? Hrishabhir bahudha proktham. He says. Brahma sutra padesh chaiva hedu malbhir vinishchide. That's that verse. In other words, Krishna is offering respect to the Vedam, saying, Brahma Sutra Padam also is speaking what I am speaking to you. What that means is, Krishna says, whatever I am saying, it's approved by the Vedam. Not that I am saying something on my own. Did you see that verse? Brahma Sutra Padescheva Hedu Madhur Vinishchide. Krishabhir Bahuda Gitam. Forget that term. Rishabhir bahudha gidam chandobhir vividhai pradak brahma sutra padeshyeva hedu madhir vinishchide. Krishna is saying, rishis have spoken about it in many ways. Rishabhir bahudha proktam. Right? Chandobhir vividhai pradak through chandas. What we talked yesterday, through chandas. Vividhai pradak. Right? Various ways about the truth. It's spoken. Right? Brahma sutra padeshchaiva hedu madhbhir vinishchide. He said that even Brahma sutram, Brahma Sutra means basically referring to Vedantam, right? Or the Vedic, or the aphorisms, what they call the sutrams of the Vedanta Sutra or Brahma Sutram, also confirms all this. In other words, you will see a glare of this. Krishna is accepting the authority of the Vedam. Whatever I am saying is not contradicting what is spoken by the rishis and by the Vedam. That's what that verse is saying. Of course, you won't you won't catch it straight away, but you have to know the way it is flowing, that conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. Because this 13th chapter is about the nature and consciousness and all that. So, while talking about Vedam, you will see this in Krishna's a certain respectful way of saying about Vedam. A respectful way of saying about Vedam. Because Vedam, we have not taken it, people have thought it's some books, remember, some old people have written and left it there like that. But to get that right respect inside for the Vedam, you get from these statements, from Krishna's words, and from others as well, those who have experienced Vedam, right? Now, here, even there Krishna doesn't show any freedom to himself to say something. He is respectful to the Vedam and he says, Vedam has spoken like this and this is what I am telling you. So, you can see that difference, don't you? Then Krishna is saying, Vedam has spoken like this and I am saying this to you. So, what he is saying is, you can verify whatever I am saying is in agreement with the Vedam or not. Do you understand? This is how Krishna is saying. And this is the same Ramchandra has done also. And this is the same Lord Shiva also has done. Nobody will at any situation will question the authority of the Vedam. It is not, they will not never do it, and because they understand what Vedam, authority of the Vedam, right? So, in the, there are different darshanam, isn't it? Philosophical schools of thought. Some of them are astic, accept the authority of God. Some of them are nastic, they don't believe the authority of any God, right? But even in the astic, that means this, those who accept the authority, some people have a difficulty in accepting Ishvara, that somebody is controlling everything, right? If you say that there is no person Ishvara, there is no such person as Ishvara, it is not difficult because that doesn't matter to us. If you say that there is no Ishvara, you find that difficult to accept that concept, doesn't matter. But if you say the authority of the Vedam is not acceptable, then it is difficult. You see? If you say, Ishvara, I don't believe in any God, some people may say like that. I'm just saying this, why? Because in this modern world, people, everybody thinks they are intelligent, aren't they? And they all bring up all kinds of arguments. But traditionally, for a very, very, very long time, how the authority of the Vedam remained intact in spite of all the onslaughts on Vedam from different parts has come in different forms, starting with Lord Buddha and many others, and even this Jainism and so many other religious processes, right, later on, which has come in the later part of the year, has attacked Vedam from all sides in different forms. So therefore, the scholars also had to defend Vedam. How it is, you cannot ignore Vedam under any circumstances, right? So if you say that authority of the Vedam is not acceptable, then you just have to say goodbye to them. You may accept Krishna or Rama as God or not. That's up to you. But if you say you don't accept Vedam, then we cannot have any conversation anymore. So, because to prove that Krishna is God or Ramchandra is God, you have to depend on Vedam. 5,000 years ago, Krishna has come and gone. Now I am saying to somebody, Krishna is God. Right? How do I prove it? On the authority of the Vedam. Isn't it? So, what you have to remember here is, even to justify the existence of a Ishvara or God,
you have to first accept the authority of the Vedam. So everything is dependent on the authority of the Vedam. Even to prove, like for example, Prabhupada preached Krishna consciousness. He wanted to establish Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead, right? He wanted to establish that for the devotees. How did he do that? Through Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam he did that. Otherwise Prabhupada says, oh Krishna is the supreme personality. Nobody will have accepted that. But in order to make that even acceptable to few people, whoever has taken to Krishna consciousness, his whole strength behind that is Vedam, which means Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, which is a part of the Vedam. Is it not? Part of the Vedam. Vedic knowledge is what is in the, but spoken in a different way. But again, authority is Vedam. Authority is Vedam. And that is the same applies to all other acharyas in all the times. All the Mahatmas, this applies to them. All of them are dependent on the Vedam, the knowledge in the Vedam, right? So, now, in this age of Kali, right, we say chant the holy name, right? You know that, Kalau Doshane De Rajan, Astike Ho Mahan Gunan, Kirtana Deva Krishnasya, Mukta Sangha Param Brajet, 12th canto. You will see this verse. What does it say? In Kali has all the faults, right? Nothing you can do properly in Kali. Whatever you do, there will be trouble. Nothing will work here. Kalau dosha nidhe rajan. It is dosha nidhi it is. It's a treasure of faults, Kali. Full of faults. That's what it said. Kalau dosha nidhe rajan. But asikeho mahan gunan. There is one great benefit in the Kali. He says, Kirtana deva krishnasya. If you chant Krishna's holy name, Mukta Sangha Param Brajet, you can get liberated from this world. Right? So, now, if you ask what is, how do you know? What's the proof for that? We say, oh, it is in Bhagavatam. Right? So, then you ask the question, how do you know that Bhagavatam is correct? You can ask that question, isn't it? How do you know that Bhagavatam is saying like this? You believe in that. I don't know. How do I accept that? At that time, then we say, Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying this in Bhagavatam, right? Then you will say, after all, Vedavyasa is also a human being. So how does he know? Right? So, then you say, how can I accept it? Because Vedavyasa said that. Then you say, oh, Vedavyasa is a Rishi. So therefore, you have to accept it. Then you are saying, maybe he is a Rishi, so what? Right? And just because it's a person who has spoken, after all, at the end, it is his realization. What's the guarantee that it is correct? You can question like that, right? So therefore, Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying there, he's not saying, I am saying this. If you look at that, you will see there that you can look at any literature like this. They will never say, this is something I have developed. Even this statement, Kalau dosha nidhe rajan, asti kekha mahan gunan, kirtana deva krishnasya, mukta sangha param rajet. Now, if you start taking this as Vedavyasa Maharshi's opinion, then you may have two questions about it. How do I accept that? Because Vedavyasa is saying that. That is why in many, many statements like this, when it matters related to self-realization, you will always find that it was spoken by a higher authority. Like Lord Shiva has spoken to Sri Parvati, and or other person has spoken to somebody. They will say like this, that somebody else has spoken to somebody else. And that I am saying to you now. Because they don't want you to believe any time it's their opinion. They never want you to take that understanding. Right? Similarly, if you trace it back like this, that chanting the holy name, Krishna's name, in all circumstances has its effect. But if you ask the authority for that, even though you may point out Bhagavatam, what Shukabrahmashi has said to, or Sudha said to, I think Shukabrahmashi has said this to Parikshit, and in another places in the same Bhagavatam, you will find again spoken. But the authority of accepting it is not based on Shukabrahmashi or Vedavyas or anybody else, it is in the Veda. It is coming from the Veda. Like in the Bhagavatam, Yannamadheyam Mriyamana Mathura. Shubramarshi says this. Padan Skalanva Vivasho Granat Puman. Vimukta Karmargala Uttamangadim Prapno the Yakshindi Nato Kalav Janaha. In the 12th canto, he is saying this. By chanting whose holy name, one who has completely fallen, Padan Skalanva Vivasho Granan Puman, one who has completely lost it, everything in life, and become so helpless in life, even such a person, Vimukta Karmargala Uttamangadim, he can get into the path of liberation. He can leave himself from this world. When such an opportunity is there by chanting the holy name, people of Kali do not take it seriously. How sad it is. Shukabrahmashi is saying this. Prapno di yakshandi natau kalau janaha. The people of Kali are still not able to recognize the importance of the holy name. Now, when we say about the holy name, generally impression is, oh, because Shukabrahmashi said this in the Bhagavatam, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told us in Shikshashtakam, or somebody else said something, therefore it has become authentic. No. What they are saying is, Vedam says this, repeated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, repeated by Shukabrahmarshi, repeated by Vedavyas, that is how it's become acceptable. This is how you understand Vedam. That just by chanting the holy name, you will get liberated. And that confirmation, or conclusions, is in the Vedam. Not from Shukabrahmarshi, not from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not from anybody else. It is in the Vedam. That's where it is coming from. What Vedavyas has done in Bhagavatam, he took that idea from the Vedam and expanded it to make it more accessible to us. That's what he has done. Do you get the point? Authority is Vedam always. Authority is always Vedam. Not Shukabrahmarshi or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Prabhupada or anybody. What they are doing is, this what Vedam has accepted, what Vedam says is true, others are, enlarging it, expanding it, and making it more acceptable to ordinary class of people. I don't think people realize this. Majority of the people are thinking that, oh, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that. But then somebody else will say, I don't follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I follow some other Acharya. Why should I listen? That's for you, not for me. But it is not like that. What Acharyas have done also, because the same holy name is glorified by all Sampradayams. It is there in Vallabha Sampradayam, it is there in Ramanuja Sampradayam, it is there in Advaita Sampradayam also. Everywhere it's there. Because chanting the holy name is in the Vedam. That's where it's coming from. But others have confirmed that in their way, different personalities. So, here, if an individual says something, not acceptable. Whether even if it is Vedavyas, it's not acceptable. If it's only acceptable, if it is in the Vedam. Of course, Vedavyas says, you know that Vedavyas didn't write the Vedam. Vedam existed before that. So, in nowhere they will say, this is a Siddhantam I have developed. All these great personalities, Vedavyas, Shukabrahmarshi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or other Acharyas also, they will always say like this, we didn't develop anything on our own. This is in the Vedam. All they are trying to tell us is, it's in the Vedam, take notice of it and follow that. It will help you. Because it's in the Vedam, it's acceptable. There is no necessity to question that anymore, because it's in the Veda. That's the principle, right? And therefore, when it comes to Puranam and all, what happens is, they will say like this, this person has spoken to this person. Like you can see, Shukabrahmashi told Parikshit, Maitreya told Vidura, or Narada Maharshi told Prajnabarhis, or Shiva told Sri Parvati. In this way it will be spoken. in Puranams. It will be like that, right? Again, the idea is to convey to us that it's not mine. It's not mine. Now, if you ask Lord Shiva who said this, he will say that I heard this from this source. They were saying this. Means all of them are saying, originally it is in the Vedam. I heard this, that was spoken by this to this person. I heard that and I'm saying this to you. In this way. So you can understand what I'm saying, isn't it? That everything is in the, what is in the Vedam only, all these great souls will talk. And they will only talk in this way. That I've spoken this to you because I heard this from another authority. And that authority heard from another authority. But then if you ask who is the final authority, it's Vedam. So, because people have this doubt about chanting the holy name. Is it so effective, this chanting the holy name? People have a doubt like that, isn't it? Which is quite natural. You can't blame anybody for that. They'll think just by chanting the holy name, you can realize the self. Is that possible? That question will come. And a lot of time people chant and then they give up at the end. They say, it's not working for me. They'll say like that. But then that's our fault. It's not the fault of the Vedam. If you don't chant, that's your problem. That's if you, up to you. How you take it, how seriously you take it. If you have faith in the Vedam, you chant the holy name. If you don't have faith, don't chant the holy name just because you have faith in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come and gone. Shukha Brahmarshi has come and gone. They have all come and gone. Vedam has not come and gone. Vedam is always there. We are saying about all these great souls because that's the only way we are used to accepting things through other person, isn't it? And that is how Mahatmas are all born. They become Mahatma because some people have accepted them as Mahatma. That's what it is. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came 500 years ago and he has come and he has gone. And we haven't got any clear information today to say where he is, what he is doing now. Of course, in the books, there will be a lot of things spoken. Right in front of us, Mahaprabhu is not there telling us. Nor there is Shukha Brahmarshi telling us. Nor there is Vedavyasa Maharshi telling us. The books are there, that's all. We have got, of course, the Goswamis also telling us. They were all chanting the holy name. But where did they get all this idea from? Where is their faith coming from? From the Vedam. Goswami's faith is coming from the Vedam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's faith is also in the Vedam. Shukha Brahmarshi's faith is also in the Vedam. Vedavyasa Maharshi's faith is also in the Vedam. So without Vedam, imagine all these personalities, where will they be? Without Vedam, what will be their situation? This will become another religion. If you take the Vedam away from this whole thing, it has become like another religious. Somebody has come and started a religion and gone. So, in the Vedic system, the authority of Vedam is above everything else. That is what we are trying to prove. The authority of the Vedam is above everything else. Nothing else matters. If you accept Vedam, you accept the presence of God. If you accept the Vedam. Not simply saying with the accepting Vedam means what Vedam says you have to do. Only then. Right? So, so that is the reason why it is like this. That this system of saying things. Lord Shiva has told Sri Parvati, and that I am repeating to you. In the Bhagavad Gita, how many places you see like that? You remember the Ajamala Moksham story, if you look. What does it say? Shukha Brahmarshi is saying, I heard this from Agastya. Kumbha Sambhava, it says about Agastya. I heard him speaking this in Malaya Parvatam. I heard this, and I am saying the story of Ajamala. Shukha Brahmarshi is saying like this. Is it not? Similarly, all other stories also, if you look, you will find somebody was talking to somebody, and that's where I got it from. But that is to say that it's not mine. We all want to say it's mine. All the rishis says it's not mine. This is the difference between us and the rishis. We all want to say, oh, it's me. Good God, I got it right. Now, I know what it is I'm talking about. That's our approach, isn't it? Rishi's approach is, they want to say to us, it's not mine. It is in the Vedam. That's what they want to say to us. This is the difference between the Rishi's way and our way. Because we have lost that understanding what the rishis had about Vedam. Did you see any book where and you know, in the modern days when you publish a book, you will put all who wrote the book, and you first you start who the author of the book, and then you accept things. If the author is acceptable, then the what is written in the book is acceptable. That's the way you look at it, isn't it? That's our method of that is, whereas any of the rishis' books or whatever rishis have spoken, there is neither their photograph nor their name nor their address nor what they told about this, because for them it is childish. For them it is childish. All these things, it's very childish. It's only in the modern world, because it is like that, people are doing this thing, and we find very great happiness in that. Oh, I published a book, my own book, my own realizations, they say. What realizations have you got? What's the value of your realization at the end? Isn't it? Realization means Vedam. If you accept Vedam, then you have realized it. But you have not understood Vedam, accepted Vedam, then what realization value has it got? So everything is finally dependent on the Vedam. Whether it is rishis, whether it is scholars or anybody for that matter, Vedam is only what is the authority. Nothing else is authority here. Right. So, that is why when you see, when the scholars debate means they discuss these things, right? They will never say that they are independent to say anything. They don't have the freedom to say anything. They will say, in this book it is written like this, which will be some Vedic literature very closely connected to the Vedam. And that authority of that book depends on how far it is close to Vedam. Vedam is always the authority, right? So, and they will say, if you find anything not acceptable in what I am saying, they will say, you look at these books and then you may get convinced on that, right? Because I am not the authority. This is the problem, right? And the same ideas, whatever I have spoken, you will find that in these books, right? And if you start going into those books and inquiring through that book, right, and you are still not convinced, then they will show you some other books which will convince you about this book, which you are not convinced of. You know, this is the way it is done, right? So that means some books which are behind this book, right? And so behind these books there is some Puranam which will support what you have spoken, and behind that there is Smriti, and behind that there is Shruti, Vedam. Vedam comes, right? So, so any Siddhantam means Advaita Siddhantam, Vishishta Advaita Siddhantam, Dvaita Siddhantam, Ajindya Bheda Bheda Siddhantam. These are all Siddhantams. Siddhantam means a philosophical concept. These are all philosophical concept, isn't it? So, any of these Siddhantam, if the Siddhantam is based on your vasana, then it is not acceptable. Because vasanas will differ from one person to another. Right? Vasanas will differ from one person to another. You will have a Siddhantam according to your vasana. Another person has a Siddhantam according to his vasana. So Siddhantam can vary based on vasana. But actually, these Siddhantams, what you are learning from the Advaitam, Dvaitam and all that, they are not vasana Siddhantam. Do you understand what that means? It has not come from vasana. Why? Everything what these acharyas are saying, they have found, they can show it to you from the Vedam. It is there in the Vedam. Advaitam is there in the Vedam. Dvaitam is there in the Vedam. Vishishta Dvaitam is also in the Vedam. So all these things are present in the Vedam. That means it is not a Vasana Siddhantam, it is actually Veda Siddhantam. So everything, when you go into that, their level, it is for example, when you say something or tattvam is spoken, it should not change. If you keep on changing your tattvam, because say you are talking to one group of people, right? And you know their taste is. And you tell them that you do these things because knowing what they call in English, playing for the gallery. You say to them something, that's what the problem in the modern world is. People do things like this. And then you go to somewhere else, you find businessmen there. Say you're talking to devotees, you talk in one way. Or students, you talk in one way. Students have full plans in their head about future life and all that. So you talk to them about spiritual life in one way. Then you go to businessmen or big rich bankers or people like that. And you see that what their way of thinking is life. And you talk to them according to their taste. And they start clapping hands for you. That is not acceptable. This is all against Vedic way of life, Vedic way of thinking, right? Because it should never be an opinion based on the taste of others or taste of or based on your vasanas. It shouldn't be. If it is like that, it is not acceptable. If it is something based on your taste, or if it is something, people are exploiting all these things in this world today. That depending on the taste of the people, people have learned how to talk to please them. And depending on your vasana is like that, so you speak like that. And that way influencing people. This is all against the Siddhantam, Vedic Siddhantam. Advaitam, Dvaitam and all is not like that. It's not to please anybody. It's completely based on the authority of the Vedam, they have presented it to us. That is the difference. That is the difference between their way of saying, Acharya's way of saying, and our way of doing things. You can see where the difference is now, right? Now, for example, it should never be an opinion of a person. That's the first principle. It should never be an opinion of a person. If it is an opinion of a person, sorry, we can't accept it. Whatever you say, show to us that it is in the light of the Vedam. It is acceptable then. Otherwise, it's not acceptable. So, this is why. Now, to prove this, how do you prove this? How do you understand this? To make it easier, see this penal code. Lawyers take this penal code, isn't it? Penal code, right? They have written down this penal code. Somebody has written for a long time. Indian penal code is there. Similarly, also here also, I'm sure there is penal codes, isn't it? And penal code has become an authority, right? Now, even the person who has written the penal code, it's not one person, it could be combined from several judgments and several lawyers. Of course, it's human-made. It's different than the Vedam. But this is just to give an idea how it works. Penal code has been compiled by several eminent scholars, eminent barristers and solicitors or whatever, higher in the law profession. They have compiled it at some point in the past. Today, a judge makes a decision. He will always refer to the penal code, the history of the law, isn't it? And then he will see if there is any similar case in the past and what was the judgment then. And he will follow that route, is it not? So, there itself, they will say that if you ask that person, how did you come to this conclusion? What will he say? I looked at the penal code. And this has happened. You see sometimes certain decisions in the... just recently there was an interesting one. If I remember correctly, that was... what has happened was... something in the House of Commons, there was some issue about it. I forgot now what it is. So, they were not sure what is the right thing to do. So, at that moment, the speaker has referred to something which happened in year 1000 or something like that, 1000 years ago. On the strength of that, he was saying, this is the decision. And everybody accepted that. This is, we are talking from a mundane level. Right? So, penal codes are like that. Now, the person who has a part of compiling this penal code, right? If he does this, commits a crime, he will be punished based on the penal code what he has written. You see? So, Vedam is like that in spiritual matters. Authority of the Vedam is like that. Like the penal code has authority in all the law, isn't it? On the law. Judges are only the interpreters of the penal code, particular situations. So, there you can see the individual's opinion doesn't matter anymore, right? Even if he is prime minister or president, if he does the crime, same crime, he should be punished based on the penal code, right? So, in these situations, what has happened now? The law is kept above everything else. Law is kept above everything else. Similarly, and it is not individual that matters, and if a judge has given a decision, a judgment, right, he will not say, it is my opinion, in his judgment, right? He will say, there is a law like this, I am implementing that law. That's what he will say in his judgment, right? So, if you commit a crime like this, this will be the punishment for that, and therefore I am giving this punishment, right? So, in the same way, behind everything, they are kept Vedam. This example I am giving only for mundane example, this is penal code and all these lawyers and judges and all that. But in matters relating to self-realization and Krishna consciousness, spiritual life, Vedam is the authority. Nothing else matters. So that Vedam, whether it is an individual or a community, or in the community where there is people with yogic power, where people had this yogic power, all of that, right? If you say all those things, it's not acceptable, right? And it will be very difficult that people to make them aware that the individual or a community or people with yogic power, all of them, is subservient to the Vedam. Subservient to the Vedam. So, first thing what you have to look at is that people who will accept the authority of the Vedam. It is for them all these things are spoken. All these things are spoken. So, we'll continue after a few minutes.
Cheto darpanam arjanam mahadavagni nirvapanam ശ്രേയകൈതവചന്ദ്രിക വിതരണം വിദ്യാവധൂ ജീവനം ആനന്ദാംബുദിവർദ്ധനം പ്രതിപദപൂർണാമൃതാസ്വാദനം സർവാത്മാസുഭനം വരം വിജയതേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ സങ്കീർത്തനം നാമനാമകാരി ബഹുദാ നിജ സർവശക്തി യത്രാർപ്പിതാ നിമിതാ സ്മരണേന കാല ഏതാദൃശീ തവ കൃപാ ഭഗവൻ മമാവി ദുർദൈവമീദൃശമിഹാ ജനിനാനുരാഗാഃ തൃണാരവിശുനീചേന തരോരഭി സഹിഷ്ണുന അമാനിനാമാനദേന കീർത്തനീയ സദാ ഹരി നഥനം ന ജനം ന സുന്ദരീം കവിതാം വാ ജഗദീശകാമയി മമ ജന്മനി ജന്മനീശ്വരി ഭവദാദ് ഭക്തിരഹൈ ദുഗിത്വയി അയി നന്ദതനുജഗിംഗരം പതിതാം വംശമേ ഭവാംബുദോ കൃപയാ തവ പാദപങ്കജസ്ഥിതധൂളീ സദൃശം വിചിന്തയ നയനം ഗളദശ്രുധാരയാ വദനം ഗദ്ഗദരുദ്ധയാ ഗിര പുളകേർനിജിതം കഥാവഭൂതവന്നാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി യുഗായിതം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായിതം ശൂന്യായിതം ജഗൽസർവം ഗോവിന്ദവരഹേ നമേ ആശ്ലേഷവാ പാദരതാം വിനഷ്ടു മാം അദർശനമർമഹദാം കരോതു വാ യഥാ തഥാ വാ വിദദാകുലം ഭടോ മൽപ്രാണനാഥാസ്തു നയേവ നാ പരാ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. സോ സോ വേദം ഈസ് കെപ്റ്റ് ബിഹൈൻഡ് എവ്രിതിങ് ഈസ് കെപ്റ്റ് ബിഹൈൻഡ് എവ്രിതിങ് Right. So, but some people will find it difficult to accept the authority still, right? So, you don't have to go looking into others who don't accept or who accept us, right? Sometimes our own mind will cause problems. Our own mind will not accept certain things, right? For example, if you don't study your own mind, you will see. The mind is also not accepting everything what Vedam is saying.
your own mind. You don't have to go look for others. Your own mind will sometimes find it difficult to accept certain things in the Vedam. Find it difficult certain things in the Vedam. At that time you can understand how difficult is accepting authority is concerned, right? They will say to you, if you say something, you believe in that, you have got bhakti for that, therefore you are accepting that, therefore you are saying like this. So, and they can ask that, apart from that, I don't see anything, it's not attracting me, I'm not able to accept it. People can say like that, or you can also say certain things about it, right? So when this opposite view comes in us, what do we do? What should we think and what should we say, right? That even though you say that this has come from the truth, Vedam, has come from the truth, and still we are not able to, even though we accept means that we believe like this, that this whole Vedic knowledge has come from the source, the absolute truth. Still we have reservations inside to accept it or not, right? So, and the people will say that this concept that God and the truth, absolute truth and all, is all your concoction, isn't it? Where is the proof for that? That way people will argue like that, right? So that's what we say. We say the beginning of the kalpam, this was spoken, right? Then they will say, I've heard all these things enough, right? You believe in like that, this was there from the beginning of kalpam. I'm trying to come to this point that the modern historian saying 2500 BC that Vedam has spoken, right? They are given a time for it. Now we say, no, it's from the beginning of the kalpam it is there. Then they say that that is your belief, isn't it? That's your belief, right? And some others are saying that this was spoken by some Mahatma and therefore they are accepting it. That way also people accept Vedam. Mahatmas have spoken. Some Mahatma in whom you have faith, he has spoken, so you are accepting it. Like, how many people knew about Vedic literature and Vedic authority before Prabhupada came here? Many people didn't know anything about Vedam. But because they have faith in Prabhupada, when Prabhupada said that, they have accepted it. That's not because they knew Vedam that they have accepted it. Because they had faith in Prabhupada, they have accepted it. Is it not? So a Mahatma comes and says something, people accept it. And then they say, oh, Vedic literature says like that. They have not studied Vedam. They haven't heard anything about Vedam before. And they are the people now saying that Vedam is the authority. How? On what basis? Because a Mahatma has spoken. They have faith in the Mahatma. Vedam, they don't know anything about it. Because Mahatma has spoken, they have accepted it. On that basis. Right? So, in everyone's vision, it is different way they are accepting it. Right? In your ideas, in your thoughts, you are saying that they are wrong. Right? And in others' vision, you are wrong. So, a lot of people, for various reasons, are not able to come to terms with this Vedam. Some people find it difficult because of its time factor, when it was spoken. They are saying that it is your belief and therefore I can't accept it. Some others are saying a Mahatma has spoken, so you have faith in that Mahatma, you are accepting it. But I don't know about that Mahatma, I have no faith in him, so I can't accept it. So you can see how the problem is, acceptance is concerned, right? So what do we do now when it is like that, right? So in this situation, you cannot get one unanimity in deciding this. Unanimity in this, right? So, some people are saying, everybody doesn't have to agree with it, right? In these conclusions. Everybody need not agree with that, right? Because, if you are feeling this, if you feel convinced or you feel your way of train of thought or thinking is in agreement with this, then you think like that, right? And they are thinking in a different way, so let them think like that, if that's the way it is. But that itself not solve the problem. Problem is then, when you say pramanam, pramanam means authority, right? Pramanam means authority, right? Pramanam means that should be something which you should not be able to shake. You should not be able it should be so solid that nobody should be able to disturb that authority. That's why it's called pramanam, right? Pramanam, in Shastram they use the word pramanam. Once you say pramanam, that means you've got to accept it. You have no right to question anymore. That's the way in the Shastram, pramanam means. Pramanam, if you started questioning, then you are no good to discuss. You are not useful because you are not accepting any pramanam. So, pramanam is the first thing in all discussions. Pramanam. You should accept pramanam. If there is proper pramanam, you should be able to agree with it. Provided pramanam is acceptable to you. That if you question that I don't accept any pramanam, that means you are not a person whom you can discuss with. It's useless discussing with you because you don't have any pramanam. You have no pramanam of your own, nor do you want to accept anybody else's pramanam. Then what am I accepting from you? Your mind. Whatever your mind has become your pramanam. Mind is not a pramanam at any time. So therefore that is rejected, right? So that's one. Then pramanam should be something that cannot be again disturbed. It should remain so solid, right? So some people say they feel bhakti in the heart to Vedam. They feel the bhakti in the heart. So therefore that's a mental thing also. Bhakti sometimes becomes very emotional, isn't it? Bhakti is very much emotional, right? So because I'm an emotional person, I have developed this bhakti for Vedam in one way, right? So therefore if I am saying that I am accepting Vedam as an authority because I feel bhakti for Vedam, therefore I accept that, that's also not acceptable. Also not acceptable. That will not become a pramanam, right? So somebody who doesn't have a bhakti for Vedam, then it's not pramanam for him anymore, right? So this, when you establish Vedam, you have to make sure that all people have to find something to support their arguments and able to end in Vedam, everything. All their beliefs, faiths and arguments, everything should end in Vedam. So, instead of accepting a form of God, or instead of accepting in any other pattern about this higher authority, if it is accepted as Vedam, Vedam itself means knowledge. If you accept it like that, then this problem will go. I don't know whether you get it. Then if you, instead of, then it comes to an end. You accept that there is a higher authority. And that knowledge is that authority. Rather than a person or a form or anything like that. Not through yoga siddhi or anything else. But that knowledge which is keeping a total control of everything, and that knowledge itself is the authority. That is why in the Srimad Bhagavatam what they said, vadandita tattvavidam tattvam yat jnanam advaya jnanam. That jnanam is Vedam. That advaya jnanam is Vedam. And that advaya jnanam is the authority which is addressed as Brahmedi Paramatmedi Bhagavanidi Shabdyade. Which is addressed as Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan. But it is advaya jnanam. So Vedam, once you say Vedam, it is this advaya jnanam. That is what he is talking about. So for example, if you say like that, once you accepted that knowledge as the authority, then when you talk about Ishvara or creation, maintenance, dissolution, right, all these things are happening in kalpam after kalpam, isn't it? That creation, maintenance, dissolution. In every kalpam it is happening. You remember we studied this in the Nitya Pralayam, Naimitika Pralayam, Atyandika Pralayam and all that. Devastations, what has happened. So, whatever that has happened in this kalpam, what is happening in this kalpam, similar things have happened in the previous kalpam. And prior to that, in the kalpam before that also, it has happened. So, therefore, what I say is that the kramam of the varnam in the Vedam, that means the letters in the Vedam, which is present in this kalpam, existed in the same form in the previous kalpam and in the kalpam before that, to make confirm that the eternity of the Vedam. It is not that in this life alone or in this particular yugam or even this Chaturyugam that this started. Vedam goes beyond than that. I don't know whether you are getting the point, because when people are coming and telling us it is 2,500 BC Vedam was come to existence, our argument is this: it is not in this kalpam even it has come. It has come previous kalpam. Vedam existed in the same varna kramam, means in the same letter form, in the order what it is now, existed in the previous kalpam. Previous kalpam. Kalpam is what? Kalpam is one day of Lord Brahma, which is 1000 Chaturyugam. 1000 Chaturyugam. One Chaturyugam is how many millions years? 4 point something, isn't it? 1.8 Kritayugam. And 1.2 Tridayugam. 864,000 Dwabarayugam. 432,000 Kaliyugam. If you add up these four, it is one Chaturyugam. 1000 Chaturyugam makes a day of Lord Brahma. So imagine how much it is, how many years it's gone. And then you add on into several kalpam before that. And in all these kalpams, Vedam existed in the same way as it is now. As it is now, right? So, so when they say this, they will say that the same varnakramam in this order, all Veda Shakha, all the branches of Vedam, were able to be remembered by the rishis, and it was given to those rishis who had the ability to carry this Vedam with them. And that's how they have got it, and that is how it is spoken. Because when you say word rishi, what does that mean? Again, our problem is, as soon as you say the word rishi, you start thinking about beard and matted hair and dressed in a way that you think that they are all rishis and not very modern, in other words. They are not wearing a suit and tie and all that, but that's the way you will get an impression in your mind about rishis, right? But rishi means basically people who are in very higher mode of goodness. That's all it means. Rishi means people who are in very higher mode of... If you ask a question, how many rishis were there? There is no answer. In different places, they will give you different lists. In Bhagavatam itself, you will find. Some of them who are very well known to us is Durvasa and Vishwamitra, Vasishtha and Bharadwaj and all that. But there are many others, great, great personalities, who had this higher state of consciousness. They are all rishis. They are all rishis, right? So, so, what happened was that this Vedam and Veda Shakha, different branches of the Vedam, right? They were in the same order without changing anything, without any alteration, either in the way it was transmitted, or in the way it was recited, or in the way it was heard, or how they have practiced it, all these things without any change. They were given to these rishis that without the process of guru-disciple, first time, it was given to them, to the rishis who were there in previous kalpam. That is how we understand Vedam. In previous kalpam, how many kalpams have gone now? That's also another question, isn't it? When it becomes too many kalpam, we also find it difficult to comprehend that. Even one Chaturyugam is difficult for us, is it not? In our present state, what to talk about Chaturyugam? One Kaliyugam itself is actually it causes our difficulty, because when we say 432,000 years and we are here for 60-70 years in this 432,000, so even 432 is enough for us. We can't take it more than that. And then when you are talking about 864 Dwaparam and 1.2 Traidayugam and 1.8 Satyugam and all that, I can't even go very that far. I can't even think about it, what all was happening here. But our conditioned mind, which is always mad after time and want to know everything, when it happened. Suppose you ask me a question, when did this all happen? If I tell you, it happened about 3.5 million years ago, how does it matter to you? If I say 5 million years ago, would it make a difference between 5 and 3.5? Like the scientists are telling us, you can see our own problem. Scientists tell us, you know, according to the latest scientific version, they say creation happened 13.5 billion years ago. Now, how many of us believe this? And if they tell us instead of 13.5, if they say 12.5, would it matter to us? Time is such a thing. Time is actually Maya. So you get caught up in all these things of think all the time, and you suffer from that. And that hangover of the time is in us very strongly. But when the rishis are saying like this, those who are so much controlled by the time, the effect of time, when you talk to them, they will not accept anything no matter what you say to them. They want the time factor. They want to know exactly when it happened. You see that coming in our own mind, it happens all the time. Isn't it? So this 13.5 million is well known. You will see all scientific. They have done some calculations. I don't know what the calculations are, but they are saying to us, I don't think anybody believes in it. It is a scientific word. Because science, there is one good thing. They can always change it when they want it. Whereas in Shastram, you don't have that freedom to change. If you say something, that's it. That forever. But scientists, tomorrow somebody else comes and says, it's not 13.5. Says it's 18.5. I say, okay, it's 18.5 then. Isn't it? So that doesn't mean anything. So time is a factor which is, as far as rishis are concerned, do not get caught up in this thing called time. That is a Maya itself. Maya is another manifestation, is time. And even if it has happened 2,500 before BC, before Christ, would that matter? Would you be, because of that, it's only happened 2,500, so this cannot be the truth. You can reject it like that. That you can reject even today, whether if it has happened. Because there's a competition between religions also, whose is the oldest one, to prove that way. So, so here, what they're saying is, that this knowledge, what happened to the rishis who lived in some kalpam before, this was given to them without this Guru Parambara, without that Guru Shishya way, right? Through Sankalpam. That is how it was given to them. But when can you say this, right? You can only say this when you accept that there is something fundamentally very solid behind everything, that knowledge, if you get that, only if you accept that. Only if you accept the authority of the Vedam, you can say like that, that this knowledge was present in different kalpams, in the same format, and was given to the rishis who were present at that time, but not through the disciplic succession, but given to them from inside, later to them, right? So, so, if you take this approach, what will happen is that this whole creation is working, right? In a particular way it is going on. That much you everybody have to agree, is it not? How this creation is operating like this. You see, we come here for a few years, and imagine the generation before us, and think about the generation before that. We don't have any knowledge about them now. Maybe we have some knowledge about the last generation, and the generation before that we have little more knowledge. But if you go back 10 generations behind us, how much can we understand them today? Very little. okay, there are some books which will tell you about how people lived in the huts and cottages and all that. A little bit of 200-300 years, maybe you may be able to get some understanding about them, how they lived in this world. But what their thinking was, you don't know. Isn't it? How they ate and how they slept and all you can say. But what was going through their mind, how their thought power was, that you won't be able to say now, today, sitting here. That is where you have to go into the literature they have produced then. From that you will get a glimpse of the state of their development of the mind. Not through the material facilities they had. If you look at their material facilities and start judging, you will naturally say that they were not very developed. But if you look at their literature, and if the literature was of a higher level of consciousness and developing higher thoughts inside us, then naturally you have to think that they were more developed inside than developed outside. This external development is not a thing where you can use it for a development of a society. You can do that. So to those who are accepting that there is a power which is running this whole show like this, and in that show we are coming here for a short period of time, we have a small, very very small role to play here for 60-70 years, and we are gone from this, and then we don't know what happened before and what happened afterwards. This is our present situation, right? So that is not very difficult to understand, isn't it? It's not very difficult, right? And that is more logical than anything else, this statement, that there is a system working here, we have come here a few years, we play our role and we are gone. That's all we know about this whole thing. That's all how much we know about it. We don't know anything about how this all came in, how this is all going to go, where we have come from, where we are going, and who we are. All this is unknown to us, right? And it is in this situation you are trying to understand the truth, right? How much handicap we have behind it, right? So, because it is like this, what they are saying is, the authority is on the Vedam, they are saying is, if you go into understanding the truth in this way, which way? Accepting that there is a power which is controlling everything, and that power is in total control of everything, including our birth and death. If you accept all that, including our prarabdham, including our experiences in life, including our happiness and distress, in everything, in every moment, if that power is controlling everything and is responsible for managing all these things, and his swarupam is that power has full knowledge of everything. And because that power has the full knowledge, knowledge has become the authority. You understand? This is how you understand God. Not pick up one form and say, my God is better than your God and my God looks more beautiful than your God. This is not getting anywhere. The way to understand is this, that everything is working here. A system is there in everything. And the system is working very efficiently. Because why? I'm only a visitor here for a few years. 50-60, I'm gone. But the system is going on for a very, very long time. So if it is all working like this, there must be a power behind it. And that power must know this whole system very well. That means the power is the knowledge. That power has the knowledge. And that knowledge, if you accept as the controller, then you can establish Vedam easily. And that is Vedam. Vedam is coming from that viewpoint. Vedam is not talking about any particular form of a deity. Vedam is not saying this is God or that is God. Vedam is saying knowledge is God. Power is given to that knowledge of this system, who is keeping this whole thing going. When we say about the system, not only this planet, all the millions and millions of planets, and as they say, there are millions of universes as well, all those included in that. There has to be a power, and that has to be full of knowledge, of fully aware of everything what's going on. And in this whole big scenario, we are just a small visitor for a very short period of time in a particular body here. And our role is over and we are gone. And then when we will come back, where we will come back, we haven't got an idea about it. To such an extent, we are controlled by that power. And that there is, at least our intelligence is telling us that there is a power, without which it cannot go on like this. And so, therefore, Vedam begins like this, that you accept there is an authority who is running the show completely, and that authority is in full knowledge of everything what's happening, and therefore that knowledge itself is the authority for everything, right? So this is called Anumanam. It is not Pratyaksham. It is Anumanam, it is, right? Anumanam helps for these things. Now you see, normally Pratyaksham is better than Anumanam in the normal life, isn't it? I have seen myself, you will say sometime. But Pratyaksham has its own limitations, direct perception. Whereas Anumanam can give you a little bit more, higher understanding than Pratyaksham itself, even though we believe in Pratyaksham. Pratyaksham means what you see directly. That's all you will accept. Some people are very... Science is Pratyaksham. Lot of it is Pratyaksham, isn't it? That's why science is always... people like to accept science authority because it's Pratyaksham. They like it. Whereas Anumanam is for highly intelligent people who have got deeper level, who are more subtle in thinking. All Vedic scholars more dependent on Anumanam than Pratyaksham. Pratyaksham is not important for them. Pratyaksham is not important for them. Anumanam is more important. And they also, you know, Anumanam has its own limitations. Sometimes your Anumanam can be wrong also, in certain cases, right? So, so Anumanam is not a waste time. And logical thinking, which is called Yukti, that also has its position, right? So, but you cannot decide any of these things based on one word or one vakyam, right? So, through Anumanam, you get to know what is the form of the truth. So, Vedam, is it through Anumanam Vedam has come to this understanding of the truth? Again, they are saying, no, it's not acceptable. So, neither through Pratyaksham nor through Anumanam Vedam is acceptable. That is why that verse from the Amnayamathanam, which was spoken, Pratyakshena Animityeva Yastu Upayo Na Vidyade. These are the two Upayam, Pratyaksham Anumanam. If that cannot be understood by either of these, that is Vedam. Neither Pratyaksham nor Anumanam can get you that knowledge. That knowledge beyond Pratyaksham, beyond Anumanam, right? So this Vedam, how will it survive? If you ask that question, this is coming back to this question yesterday, we had this, that how will it survive like this, kalpam after kalpam? How did it survive? That question is valid, isn't it? Because at the end of kalpam, everything gets destroyed. So, who had carried this knowledge? How did it stay, right? Mimamsakas have the answer for that. Those who have studied Mimamsa, they'll say that this tradition of Guru Shishya Parambara, that system, was never broken, right? So, for example, if you are arguing with a person who is atheistic, right, how to argue with him? Or if you are arguing with a theist, because theists also argue. Not that everybody accepts everything. Theist is asticum, isn't it? And atheists are the Gnostic. So, how to argue with an atheist and how to argue with a theist, both are spoken, right? Then Gnostics are saying, that means atheists are saying, all this Vedam what you are talking about is that at some point in time in the history, doesn't matter when, somebody has written in down all these things, and all what is mentioned in the Vedam. Vedam means, particularly they are referring to Karmakandam. Karmakandam is the one result oriented, isn't it? If you perform certain sacrifices, you will get certain results. For example, you remember Dasharatha performed putragamishti to have children. So it is all result oriented, right? And similarly, if you want rain, if you are short of rain, Adiratram is spoken. And similarly, you will see Ashwamedham was performed to free yourself from sinful reactions like that, right? So, karmam, Vedam is saying, if you perform certain karmam, you will get certain results. This is statement of the Vedam, right? So, atheists are saying, your statements that if you perform these karmam, it has no result. You say like that, right? And you are saying that while performing these sacrifices, whether it is Ashwamedham, Rajasuyam, whatever it is, those who are reciting the mantram, they have to be perfect. Otherwise, results won't come. Whether it is any mantra for that, right? That's not acceptable, they say. Because there is no proof for that. This is their argument, right? So to such a person, if you say that all this mantram has come from the truth, he is not going to believe it. He is not even accepting the karmakandam of the Vedam. For example, you know that karmakandam, everybody followed that, is not. Parikshit followed that. Yudhishthira followed that. Prajina Barhis followed that. Prithu Maharaj followed that. Mahabali followed that. Now, if it was something, it was not giving the result. Do you think any of them would have followed? After all, they are also intelligent people, aren't they? But Prithu followed that. 99 Ashwamedham he did. Prajina Barhis did. A lot of Ashwamedham he did. But who else? You see in the Bhagavatam, so many others mentioned. Yudhishthira did 3 Ashwamedham after the Mahabharata war. Similarly, Mahabali did. So many, 99 Ashwamedham, isn't it? So, it is in one of that Ashwamedham, Vamanamurti comes in. So, that shows that they had belief in this. Now, would you say that all of them were ignorant? That Mahabali and Prithu and Ramachandra performed so many sacrifices, did he not? You remember, after returning from after the Mahabharata war, Ramachandra performed plenty of yajnam. And for that, Sita Devi was not there. So he, remember Garga Bhagavatam, we read this. He created yajna sitas. He created Sita Devi in the gold, with gold, and gave life to them to act as his wife in the sacrifices. So would you say that Ramachandra wasn't aware of all these things? Did he believe that the yajnam will not work? Now, they have no problem. We at least act to some extent, because we have not performed any yagam for any result so far. So we also don't know about it, isn't it? But for an ordinary person who is totally atheistic, he will not accept any of these things. Yajna Sita has come as gopis, is it not? Because Ramachandra told them that you can come as gopis if you want to associate with me in that way. And that's how in Krishnavataram, these Yajna Sitas, who are in the form of this golden deity form, who were given life by Ramachandra, has come as the gopis in Krishnavataram, right? So, the thing is this, that to such a person who doesn't believe in any of these things, if you tell him that this was all come from the absolute truth, he's not going to accept it. He will say, what kalpam? He says, where is the proof for a kalpam? Where is the proof for srishti? He says, and where is the proof for pralayam? That is how people are. People's mind is like that. They will say, where is the proof for all these things? This is the modern way, isn't it? Many people who have no contact with the Shastram, who have only studied science, this is how they will ask. They will say, where is the proof that there was a srishti, creation? Where is the proof that this is all going to end one day? Have you seen it? They will say. So what can I say? I'm only here for 78 years. How will I see that? So, for such people to talking about this authority of the Vedam come from the highest truth, it will not be acceptable to them, right? So, so a person with such a mindset, who has got a mindset like that, how should we talk to him? All these are questions before the scholars or the Vedic teachers, right? This much if you understand, that Vedam means not only the knowledge in the books, the whole process, that means a guru, a disciple, and the process of transferring the knowledge from the guru to the disciple, the varnam, the padam, the vakyam, and their kramam, the way it is recited, chanted and taught, and that is called the method of education, adhyayanam, veda adhyayanam, veda adhyayanam, right? So veda adhyayanam, even if you look today among those who are studying Vedam, and if you look at the Veda tradition of teaching the Vedam in the past, any time before, right, you will see that the system was the same. It hasn't changed, right? And all Veda adhyayanam has happened through Guru, Guru Shishya, in that way. So from the Guru, there will be another Guru for him. If you have a Guru, he has a Guru for him. So, and in this way it will go, right? So Guru Parambara, Shishya Parambara is there. Similarly, Ucharana Parambara. Ucharana Parambara means that the way you speak, that Ucharana Parambara has not changed. And similarly, Adhyayana Parambara, that means the way the student picks it up, the thing, that also has not changed. So the students, the children who studied the Vedam and became well versed in the Vedic knowledge, how they have accepted it and practiced it, and how it was given to them from their guru, and the way guru interacted with them and taught them, and similarly that the way they recited the Vedam, Ucharana Parambara, all that remains as it is for all times. It has never changed. All over. It remained like that. Right? So, so that is why there are so many books available. Right? And even some of the oldest books, if you take and you look at it, there also, the teaching of the Vedam is always through Guru Shishya way. Parambara. Guru Shishya Parambara. Right? And also you will notice all the varnam. First they tell them to how to pronounce each letter properly. Varnam, without fault. Where to give the stress when you pronounce a letter. Right? When you pronounce a letter, where to give the stress on. Which part of the tongue and which part of the upper lips, lower lips. All these things are there. Right? So, we have two different perceptions about these things, right? We say Vedam was not compiled by a person, right? But that, when you say that to somebody, the other person is not able to accept it. This is a difficult thing. Because our buddhi, you have to know the limitations of the buddhi also. Buddhi is saying, how can it be? When you say to somebody, Vedam was not spoken by a person, the other person will say, how can it be? Because in his level of buddhi, he is at that stage. His buddhi hasn't been able to accommodate this statement. Able to understand. So, what is the reason that it is not getting into him? You have to think like this. Why is that when a statement is made that Vedam was not spoken by a person? Why is that statement not acceptable to many people? Because their buddhi is not accepting for that. And the reason for that, there is a vasana that has gone inside that person like a virus and affected the buddhi. That's what it is. That how does buddhi changes from person to person? Because of the vasana inside. Depending on what was, you know, Vedic scholars know this better when they talk about it. They will say that if your buddhi is not working and accepting something, it's not the fault of the shastram, it's the fault of your buddhi. In your buddhi, some vasana has affected you, and that is causing the problem for your buddhi to accept it. How many people will agree with this today? Isn't it? See the problem. That many people think I am intelligent. I should be able to understand. This is how you are coming like this to take it. But the rishis are saying to us that our buddhi level is different. Even students, you will find this. Certain things in the Vedam, certain children are able to absorb it without any difficulty. Some other children are struggling. But the guru will tell the children, it's not the fault of the shastram, first you accept that. Fault is in you. Something, so you correct your fault. That means in your buddhi, what is that vasana that is preventing you from understanding it? Correct there and you will understand it. This is the way to change that, right? So, so in our vasana now, what this vasana, what is that? If it is a statement, it must be from somebody. This is our problem. And that has to go from us first. That only all statements can only come from persons. This is in our head very strongly, isn't it? If we say that Prime Minister said this, or President said that, we will accept straight away. But if we say it is, it has come from the sky, we will say no, it cannot come from the sky. Our buddhi won't accept that. So, person is required wherever you say that there is a statement. And so, therefore they will say that maybe these songs, what is in the Vedam, somebody was singing and playing, walking around with these songs. And that's how they have happened. And but we have not seen who compiled it. We don't know. They will say like this. We don't know who wrote it. But, okay, somebody must have written it, but later on somebody else is singing them. And that's what Vedas are. This, they come up like that. So, their calculation is, at some point in time, some people who lived then, they have compiled something that could be Vedam. This is how the science is coming from. The historians also. Their conclusion is like this. You see the difference between the Vedam and the other way of looking at it? Their way of looking at it is like this. That if it is there in the form of words and songs and all that, somebody must have compiled it, right? Somebody must have compiled it. Now, if we don't know who compiled it, the only thing we can say about it is it was compiled by somebody whom we don't know, but later on others were singing them and reciting them, and that is how it has come. But still they believe that it was compiled by somebody. Now, you have to correct that yourself in your own brain, that vasana, what has gone inside, right? So, in such a mind, who has got that kind of, who feels very firmly believe that it was compiled by somebody, and that this situation has come into their head. It has become very firmly in their head, right? And that means their mind and their intelligence can only accommodate these things. It cannot accept anything else. Manasika vyabharam, it's called, right? That vyabharam, and this is their bhavana, this is their way of thinking. It has come like this. So, what is the reason for that? Because everything you see in this world is like that. Everything. So, unless somebody has spoken, it cannot be said that. Everything is spoken, there must be somebody behind it. So, their thinking on the same way. The Vedam also must be like that. It can't be anything different than that, right? So, when the buddhi is not accepting something, this is the situation. So, the first thing we have to do is to wash their brain. Unless you wash their brain, because the brain is infected with this concept, until you wash their brain, from this you can understand, to put too much faith on your mind and brain is stupidity. It's not proper. It's wrong actually to think and keeping people in that concept that mind and brain is everything. It's a very sad thing to do. Because that means you are coming out the understanding that everything is perfect with you. You are also not created perfect because Brahma himself says, I have created this person with Rajogunam in them. Is it not? Rajodigaha karma varaha dukheja sukhamanina. How can you say you are perfect? Is it not? So, when that is the situation, that means you yourself have not understood you properly. You haven't understood about yourself properly. what you are, and you are making these statements, and that is a problem. So first thing what is required is to correct yourself. That vasana that has gone inside as a virus and affected your intelligence to think like that has to change first. After that we can talk. So we'll continue tomorrow. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.